And ready for another edition of Trailblazers Courtside, presented by Pacific Power. Brian Wheeler, Antonio Harvey in studio, and getting ready to review another week of Trailblazers basketball. And the Blazers last night, Tone, a workmanlike effort, I would say. Got the job done in the win at Utah. So now 18-4 on the season, and I think maybe more impressively, 9-2, best road record in the entire NBA.
Been absolutely amazing. And when you think about the way they've played and the way that they've won games, they've certainly won games in a physical manner. We saw that last night. We saw that versus Indiana. They won games with the three-point shot. They're finding ways to win. And when you want to be a good team, you can't have teams come in and change the way that they do business, and then that changes the way you do business. The Blazers have been very workmanlike, and I see success on the horizon even better than what we've seen so far.
All right, let's give you a look at what's ahead on the show tonight as we take a look at our courtside tip-off presented by Standard TV and Appliance. Blazer assistant Kim Hughes is going to be with us at about 6:15 or so. And then Ian Thompson, senior writer for SI.com. SI.com coming out with their NBA power rankings this week. And hey, looky here, the Blazers number one atop the list. And a few national power rankings have started to represent the Blazers in a positive way. And so I think the people around the country start to figure out that there's a pretty good story going on here in Portland.
Well, why wouldn't it be? I mean, I'm looking here right now. I'm thinking to myself, the Blazers at 17-4, I would not have put them number one, and I see them every night. Maybe I see some of the things that they do wrong, but when you start hearing national writers talk about this Blazers team as number one in the power rankings, it solidifies what we've already known. This is a team that came into this season pretty good that got a lot better.
Yeah, so the Blazers number one at the top of the SI.com power rankings. We'll take a look at a lot of the other Western Conference teams, where they rank, as you might imagine. The Western Conference dominating the top 10 of that power ranking, as they do just about any power ranking, considering how great the West has been. But when we come back, we'll get things started in earnest. Trailblazers Courtside presented by Pacific Power. We'll get things rolling on this Tuesday night and take a look at the Blazers week ahead, which will feature a big-time matchup with Dwight Howard, James Harden, and the Houston Rockets on Thursday night. Back with more after this on Comcast SportsNet.
He touched the ball. The Blazers have double teamed Carmelo at all. Lillard to the middle. Throws down his second. Dwayne. back on his own. He'll flush it. What a quarter for Batum, doing a little bit of everything.
Rangers have Aldridge on Hibbert. Nice move on the baseline. Gathers and blocks it out of bounds. Shot clock at a 3-on-2 if they'd have gone quickly.
Two now. Secondary fast break. Millard to Aldridge.
Another edition of Trailblazers Courtside presented by Pacific Power. Brian Wheeler, Antonio Harvey in studio with you as the Blazers roll on 18-4, best record in the Northwest Division, best record in the Western Conference, second best record in all of the NBA. And tonight, pretty good battle that we'll keep an eye on in Indiana as the Pacers and Heat are getting together for the first time, rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals from a year ago. But on the program tonight, Blazer assistant coach Kim Hughes will be with us in our next segment. We'll also get a national perspective on the Blazers from Ian Thompson of SI.com, their senior writer. Blazers currently ranked number one in the power rankings at SI.com. But I get the feeling, Tony, that something like power rankings is more for the fans than anything else. It seems like the players don't get caught up in what other people are saying. I think, in fact, Wesley was asked last week after the Blazers beat Oklahoma City, are you the best team in the league? And he said, hey, that's for you guys to decide. And I think the players are doing a pretty good job of not getting caught up in the hoopla surrounding their great start.
Well, how many times have you seen a team get caught up in the hoopla and all of a sudden they take a loss? I mean, how many number ones have we seen go down in the NCAA tournament? If you're the Blazers right now, the most important thing for you to do is stay grounded, stay level, stay in a position where you're going to work harder and harder every single game, get better at what you do. And, you know, it's interesting, Wills, I was talking to, and I think you saw, you may have seen the article as well, I was talking to LaMarcus and then I talked to Joe Freeland separately, and they both said the same thing. Practices have become almost more difficult than games. And that's the situation you want to be in. You love that as a head coach to see your teams competing. When I was here with the Blazers, when we went to the Western Conference Finals and ultimately lost to the Lakers, one of the things that Scottie Pippen drove into our minds was we want to practice so hard that when we face other people, it's an easy task. And that's what I'm starting to see from this Blazer team. They're competing in practice, they're competing in games, and they're winning because of that.
I think, and we'll talk to Kim Hughes about this in our next segment, I think that the coaching staff and the training staff have done a nice job of a balance, though, when they have the occasional off day or days in between games, as is the case playing last night, winning in Utah, not playing again until Thursday. Today was a full day off. I mean, it was optional workouts and so forth, and a lot of guys still take advantage of the chance to come in and get in some work. But I think they've done a pretty good job of managing the days off so that fatigue hasn't set in, injuries haven't set in. I think I heard the term made the other day by one of the members of the training staff, the controllable injuries. We're doing a good job of making sure that those don't creep up. And obviously, accidental injuries can happen to any team at any time. But I think the days off, managing the minutes, and making sure that you understand it's a long NBA season, that's, I think, been very positive in terms of the way things have been handled so far.
Well, you got to give a lot of credit to the staff overall, the coaching staff, the injury prevention staff, the strength staff. I mean, everybody's done a good job in coordination. And what I'm seeing is like you said, the injuries that you can prevent, a pulled muscle here, you know, broken bone to C.J. McCollum's foot, there's nothing you can do about that. It was going to happen. But it's strains and sprains and things of that nature that we're not seeing from this Blazers team that really impressed me. And they've done an excellent job of managing time, managing energy. But I think what you're also seeing is practices that are short and intense, so that you get in everything you need to get in a very short amount of time, and that's the best way to go.
Yeah, there's not a lot of wasted effort. So at least the players know when we're coming, we're working, we're dedicating this much time to this particular drill, we're moving on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And I think Terry Stotts does a very good job of keeping practices as interesting as they can be for guys, but also understanding there's work to be done. And I would think, especially now, when you have a day off today, then you get back to practice tomorrow, you have that rare opportunity with a couple of days in between games, you will do a little more work at practice as opposed to just kind of a maintenance day, which they also have some of those along the way as well. And considering you've got a pretty tough opponent coming in on Thursday night, Houston, a team that's already beaten the Blazers, then I would think maybe some extra dedication given to trying to figure out what you'd like to do better than the first matchup we had against them.
Well, you can pinpoint, you know, the coaching staff didn't take a day off today, I can guarantee you that. They were watching film, breaking down that last game, looking at what Houston has done over the last four or five games of their season, what they were successful with versus the Blazers, and you know, you want to game plan, and it starts tomorrow with the beginning of practice, and you slowly build so that by the end of practice, you're doing everything that you want to try to execute on Thursday night. You know, and so Wednesday at the end of practice becomes a dry run for Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening.
I was very encouraged that the Blazers had 2 days off to get ready for the game on Thursday, until I saw that the Rockets have 3 days off to get ready for the game on Thursday, so they'll be an even more well-rested team. But you were saying to me last night that sometimes you can get to a point where you have maybe too much time off.
Absolutely. I've seen it happen before where all of a sudden you lose a little bit of an itch. 3 days off during the season is absolutely outstanding. I mean, that's usually reserved for All-Star weekend, and that's about it. Maybe Christmas break if you're lucky. So, you know, you can lose an edge because you have that day off, and I'm sure Houston had a day off, and then you start practicing for the Trailblazers. But how long do you really need to go over the Trailblazers? 2 days of preparation, you know, that can be too much. It's going to be a good game no matter what. I'm not as concerned with the Houston Rockets as I was the first time, and I'll tell you why. This team has an identity. They know who they are, and it's not even one identity, Wills. We've seen two very separate identities from the Portland Trailblazers. One is a very perimeter-oriented three-point shooting team, and the other one is a post-up team where they really pound the ball into LaMarcus Aldridge. They get him going, and then that opens up some threes later on.
Yeah, I mean, the teams, obviously, as the Blazers get scouted more, they're figuring out that they like to shoot the three-point shot. They're pretty good at it. They shot their lowest percentage, 30%, in the loss to Dallas on Saturday. They weren't a whole lot better in that respect, 32% last night. But when they needed a three-pointer, two big ones late in the game from Nick to beat the shot clock, and then after the Blazers got a defensive stop, Dame's three cinched the game for the Blazers once and for all in the win at Utah. And again, what's interesting is that the Blazers in this early part of the season with these road wins, they've been able to win in buildings that they haven't been very successful in the last few years, to win in Denver, to win at Golden State, to win at Utah, to win in L.A. against the Lakers. And I know Terry Stotts said, we can't worry about the history of the last 10 years or 5 years that the franchise has had in these various buildings. But for those of us who have traveled to these buildings and known that the Blazers haven't had a lot of success there, these are still very satisfying wins.
You know what it feels like, and I certainly understand that there are certain things that are involved in the psyche, the mindset of a team when they go on the road. But what I'm starting to see is a team that recognizes that ultimately 94-50 by 10. That's what a basketball court is. It's 94 feet long by 50 feet wide, and the rim is 10 feet tall in every single arena in the entire NBA. If you can eliminate the crowd and their effect on you, you can win games any place, and this team is starting to allow the crowd to affect them less.
And every good NBA team that has done some consistent winning over the years, they take great joy in going into an enemy building, taking that crowd out of the mix. Absolutely.
But you know what? I don't like that. I think that's too much.
Yeah.
How about you just hit the three and run on down the court? They're going to shut up anyway. You don't have to tell them. It's what they do.
Absolutely. So the Blazers have done that 9 out of 11 times. Remember, a team that won only 11 road games all of last season in 41 tries, and they've already got 9 in the first 11 attempts on the road this season. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the Blazers' early season success with assistant Kim Hughes, and also coming up in a little bit, Ian Thompson, senior writer for SI.com, Blazers' number one ranked in the SI.com latest weekly ranking. That and more as we continue. It's Trailblazers Courtside presented by Pacific Power, simulcast on Comcast Sportsnet, the Blazers Radio Network, and stream live at trailblazers.com. our obligatory weekly shot of Ruben Boobche Boonche for those watching on Comcast Sportsnet and on our live stream at trailblazers.com. It's Brian Wheeler, Antonio Harvey back here on Trailblazers Courtside, presented by Pacific Power. And we're joined now by Blazers assistant coach Kim Hughes. And, Coach, in the last segment, Tone said, I know the coaches didn't have a day off today, even though the players didn't have any practice. Can you verify your activity for the day?
Actually, Tony's a very smart man. The day off means day off for the veterans who play max minutes. A lot of the young guys were in there, and actually I got to torture Myers Leonard for about an hour and a half. If you ask him if it was an off day, he probably wants to shoot somebody right now.
Hey, Coach, I have a feeling just being around you guys and watching your interaction, you get great pleasure out of torturing Myers Leonard.
I do, because they talk a big game about what they can do, and then I'll let them show me on the court, and they don't ever show me. So I love the banter with players. I love the constant camaraderie. It's really what draws me to the sport, because you can't get that in any other type of business.
You learn a lot from body language, and watching Myers on the bench, he still seems engaged and trying to be supportive of his teammates and so forth. But when the season began, he thought he was going to be a part of the rotation. How is he handling the fact that he isn't getting the playing time that he got in his rookie season, and what is he doing in terms of – are you pleased with his work ethic in terms of trying to get some of that playing time back?
I do like his work ethic. He is a driven kid. He did expect minutes like a lot of the young guys did. We had a very – bad bench last year, and they were awarded minutes that they didn't deserve. So none of them should have assumed that they were going to be garnering those type of minutes on the court this year. They need to be earned. And Joel Freeland has just played so well. It's been incredible that it's tough to steal his minutes. So Myers has to wait on the outside in terms of an injury, or if Truck Robinson waivers at all, then he can steal those minutes. And the teammate, he's been terrific, very positive, very supportive, and honestly, this is one of the best teams I've ever been in terms of chemistry. The guys, I don't say they love each other, but they really respect each other, and they really have a certain kind of feel for each other, which you don't find in most NBA teams.
You know, Coach, we were talking along those lines. We were talking in the first segment about practice time, practice habits for good teams. And when I was here in Portland, we had a great team, and we said this earlier, we felt like we wanted practices to be so intense, not so hard, not trying to hurt each other, but so intense that when we got a chance to play against somebody else, it almost seemed easy. I've seen a couple of practices. This team, they go at one another in practice.
They do, but I think your team was more aggressive that way. I don't know. I don't think we have the practice players that you guys did, but what we do have is the unselfishness on offense and defense, which you don't always get. I think our guys like to compete against each other, but I think you guys took it to a whole new level. These guys, I don't think they necessarily like practice, but they love to play games, and I love the fact that a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, who is the best power forward in basketball right now, he gets the ball in the low block. He embraces a double team. Swings the ball. He may not get the assist because we'll make two more swing passes, but he makes the play out of the post, which you need. And this year is just night and day compared to last year.
Yeah, you were around last season, and LaMarcus obviously earned his second trip to an All-Star game. But this year he's already been Western Conference Player of the Week twice. He's putting up a double-double, averaging a career high in points and rebounds. He's talked more about being a leader, says he's having more fun than he's ever had in the NBA. Can you speak to a guy that was pretty good last year but seems even greater this season?
He's better because his defense is better. His offense is basically the same. He played at a very high level last year, and I thought he was terrific. But this year defensively, and perhaps it's because of Robin Lopez having his back. If LaMarcus went for a block shot last year, or our center last year wouldn't seal or take care of his man, and it caused us a lot of difficulty. Well, this year we have a crazy man in the middle that he protects the paint, and he doesn't allow any layups, which we love. And it makes LaMarcus a better defender. And the same thing goes for LaMarcus. He's making Robin a better defender because Robin knows if he goes to challenge a shot that LaMarcus will clean up after him.
You know, Coach, you just brought up something that kind of goes unnoticed, and that is the effect of having that big center in the middle. Robin Lopez doesn't average tremendous numbers, but what you just said, he will clog up the paint, and I've tried to allude to perimeter defenders get better when you have a center in the middle of the paint, because as a guard, you're more hesitant to drive there because you know you're going to feel contact.
Without question. I think we're last in the league in causing steals, but, you know, Nick is a very good defender. He could perhaps get a lot more steals, but that's what we wanted. We don't have any interest in going for steals, denying wing passes. Our interest is to set the pace. That's most important for us. So Nick could probably garner those types of stats. But we want our guys to contain. Damian Lillard has done a much better job of point guards on the paint, which I think is the most difficult thing in basketball. And Wes is such a competitor. We just are better defensively because guys have worked at it, and they feel more confident because Robin and or L.A. will clean up if they penetrate. We've given up some easy baskets against teams like Phoenix because they hurt us for some reason. Stretch four, a four who has ability to shoot the three, presents problems for our team without question. It bothers us. But for the most part, I think we've done a good job stopping easy baskets and keeping guys out of the paint.
You mentioned the bench, and obviously vastly improved from last season. Speak to the intangible elements, Mo Williams and Earl Watson. It seems like they bring a bravado, a swagger that this Blazers team didn't have last season, and maybe that's what in some ways has accounted for the great start, a great belief in within the group that this is a pretty good team, and obviously the results are showing it on the court too.
It certainly has helped in terms of Earl. He's like a coach on the floor, very tough. He basically goes at Mo every day in practice and really punishes them. I mean, that's his glory, is to make sure whoever guarding him in practice suffers, because Earl is a tough kid. Just he is tough. Where Mo is a speedster, he creates up-tempo in the games, and sometimes he has some turnovers, and frankly, it's because the other guys in the team aren't running with him, trying to make plays one-on-two, one-on-three, because the rest of our guys aren't running the way they should with him. But Mo makes big shots. He's a mid-range jumper, jump shooter that doesn't mind if someone puts a hand in his face. He has no fear, and he has an incredible innate ability to make big shots, which he does for us all the time.
And he completely changes versus last year. He's completely changed what you're able to do as a coaching staff, because you can play Mo with you can play him with Dame, you can play him with Wes, you can play him with Nick, you can play three small guys. You know, you got the versatility he brings in, what he allows you to do with Damian Lillard has really changed the way this team plays.
Without question, it just gives us so many options. I did a scouting report for Dallas, and what I found difficult for us to guard them is have so many guys that can play various positions. It's such a tough cover for a team to try to have to plan for that. And Mo can play one or two, and Wes can play one, two, or three at times. And Nick, honestly, can guard a one, two, three, or four. He has that ability. He may not have the strength, but he can front the low block, and he can get away with it. And I thought he did a good job the six, seven times he was guarding the Nowitzki in our game against Dallas. So when you have guys that can play multiple positions, it just makes coaching so much easier.
Speaking of tough guys, you would certainly qualify as one. A lot of people probably familiar with the health concerns that you had in training camp that you had to overcome. Tell us how you're feeling, and hopefully all those things we hope are behind you.
I'm great. I 3 days ago, I stopped packing the wound. It's sealed up enough where it's not bleeding. Still a little bit gory, but it doesn't bleed, which is very nice, and my strength is good. My voice, if I talk too much or if I try to yell, my voice gets very hoarse, but it's getting better all the time. And that's just a result of having three tubes down my throat for 2 weeks, which isn't very pleasant. But I feel really good, and I don't feel stronger every day like I did the first 6 weeks, but the last three, I've gotten better weekly. So life is pretty good.
So your days as a swimsuit model may be recurring again.
I may not take that shirt off at the beach this year. I may wait for the scars to heal for one more year.
Well, 18-4. You as a coaching staff in a different position than you were a season ago. You were trying to encourage your club to believe that they had a chance, especially when they went up against quality teams in the league. Now you guys are a little bit more of the hunted as opposed to the hunters. Is it a different mindset as you prepare these guys for games? It seems like they're taking their success in stride and not getting too full of themselves.
You know, we've talked about the fact that this could be a pretty good year. We've talked about it privately, and I think most of us felt that way. But I think we'd all be lying if we wouldn't say we're surprised at this record. But what we've had the ability to do is we won some games that were close. Either we forfeited like leads in five games kind of to our own fault. And it happens. But we've eventually won those games. So we've never had one of those losses that we look back and say, dang, we had no business losing that game. So we've won the games we're supposed to win. And we had a good win against San Antonio, good win against Indiana, good win against Oklahoma City. And all those are important. But our view is just to take it game by game. Our only focus is for Houston now. They don't run any plays. They just shoot threes, and they throw it into Howard. And they're just a ragtag team of very highly skilled individual players. And we need to defend the perimeter. And we don't care what happened at Utah. We don't really care what's going to happen on a road trip. Our guys are really focused on the task ahead, which is kind of refreshing. And not one of our guys right now is gloating about the victory in Utah or what a record is. We don't even mention it. We don't even say what position we're in. I mean, certainly we hear before the home crowds were the best record in the East and in the West, and that's really nice to hear. But we don't ever dwell on it. After games, nobody ever is. I think LaMarcus started this. Let's get the next one. He's been so stoic and so professional and really trying to be a leader. And let's keep this tempered. Let's keep the task at hand of what we need to do.
No, it seems like it starts and stops with LaMarcus coaching. You just hit the nail on the head. He has truly evolved, is the word I like to use when people ask me about him. He's been a great player, but his evolution to where he is has been tremendous.
I think you're right. You know, from the outside looking in, I remember 5 or 6 years ago, we were really scared of him, the way he ran the floor against us. He really hurt us. And then he progressed to maybe moving out from the post and facing up jumpers, but he's got the whole package. He doesn't run as much as he used to, but he's had, like, offensive rebound hammer dunks in both the last two games, and I haven't seen him do it in a while. He's posting up basically 15 to 18 feet away from the hoop and just draining jump shots in everybody's face. It's been unbelievable the degree of difficulty shots he's making. It's just funny. And he's rebounding. People don't know how strong he is. He plays very stiff. So he doesn't look like he's got his leg, but he's got such a strong upper body, and he can create space just by a bump with that forearm or that shoulder. And the game is just so easy for him right now.
Coach, we're happy to hear you're feeling well, and certainly the team has had a great first quarter of the season, but plenty of basketball left to be played. I know you guys know that. Have a good day of practice tomorrow, and we'll see you back here on Thursday for the rematch with the Rockets.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Coach.
Blazer assistant coach Kim Hughes, and very direct guy. Like the way that he was talking about his practice time with Myers.
Yes. You know, you watch those two. It's almost like a big brother beating up on a little brother. They are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, as soon as Myers came to town last year, I mean, the two were put together, and they've been inseparable ever since, and I think that is to Myers' benefit to learn from somebody like Kim Hughes. He may not always feel that after a day like today,
yes.
But I think bottom line, he'll agree long-term that he'll benefit from the experience, that's for sure. All right, when we come back, Ian Thompson, senior writer for SI.com, one of our favorite national guys, will be with us talking about the latest SI.com rankings, which have the Blazers at number one. Can't get any higher than that last time I checked. Second half of the program is straight ahead. It's Trailblazers Courtside presented by Pacific Power. We are streamed live at trailblazers.com and simulcast on the Blazers Radio Network and Comcast SportsNet. All right, we roll on. It is Trailblazers courtside. Final in from Indiana. The Pacers winning the first rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals from a year ago as they take out Miami 88-81. So Indiana improves to 19-3 on the season. Continuing to have the best record in the NBA, Miami falls to 16-6 with that road defeat tonight.
And they're still going to win it. They're still going to be in the Eastern Conference.
The Heat?
Yeah, they're coming out of the East. I thought Chicago would do it.
I did too originally. But you think the Heat and Indiana, if Indiana has home court, now they think that was the one thing missing last year, that Game 7 was played in Miami and not Indiana.
LeBron is too talented. Dwayne Wade is resting all year. That's why they're 16-6. They have no Dwayne. And I'm not a Heat fan. You know that.
Yeah.
But they have too much talent now. And they're saving Dwayne Wade for the postseason. He'll be 100% going into the postseason. There's no way Indiana can gloat on this victory all they want. They're not the best team in the East.
All right, let's see if we get some agreement on that or maybe some dissent from our next guest, the senior writer from SI.com, Ian Thompson. Ian, the Pacers' great start and a win tonight over Miami. Does it mean something long-term? And obviously, I'm guessing it means more to Indiana to have home court in the Eastern Conference playoffs than it might the Heat. But Indiana obviously is doing their best to show that the great season they had a year ago, they're carrying it over very, very well so far.
Oh, absolutely. I do agree. Miami's the best team. And, unless something crazy happens, I think you just got to pick Miami to get out of the East. Paul George has been terrific for the last calendar year. But, you know, when you look back at what LeBron James has had to go through for years to learn how to do what he does in the playoffs now, we can't take for granted that Paul George will be that same kind of player in the playoffs in the Game 6, the Game 7 of an Eastern Conference Finals. We know absolutely LeBron James will. The first 7-8 years of his career, he wasn't that guy. And I just think that is a huge advantage for Miami. Even if they have to win on the road, I still like them with the advantage. Now, let's see. Maybe Dwayne Wade is really hurting in the playoffs again, and maybe Paul George is playing great. You know, a lot can change. But right now, you have to I just think the default position is that Miami is going to be in the finals.
Yeah, I got a question for you, Ian. I'm having this debate on Twitter a lot with a lot of different fans. To me, there's a battle for the second best player in the NBA. You've got Kevin Durant, you've got Chris Paul, and I think Paul George is in the conversation. And after watching him play live versus the Blazers just over a week ago, I went ahead and said I thought he was the second best player in the NBA, LeBron being the hands down best player. What's your stance on those guys and just that group of players that's battling for that second seat in the league?
Well, right now, Antonio, I agree with you that he is playing better than anybody else except for LeBron. But if I was going to phrase it, he's the second best player in the league. He has to prove more. Kevin Durant got his team to the NBA Finals and came close. I mean, they had a chance in some of those games against Miami in the NBA Finals. To me, he's the second best player right now based on what he's been able to accomplish, what you know he can do, what you can count on, his track record. Paul George could be that guy. Because of all the different things he can do at both ends of the floor. But I just think he has to prove more before I would put him ahead of Kevin Durant. But it's a real interesting conversation to have. And if you phrase it right now, who's playing better right now, then it's true, Paul George. But, you know, in the big picture, who cares who's playing well right now, you know, in the first couple months of the NBA season. And whenever you get into the spring, I always play this little game with myself. I can never remember what happened in November and December. Mm. When we're in the playoffs, it's just so hard to remember what happened in the first couple of months of the season. And that kind of tells you it almost doesn't matter in a way.
Ian Thompson of SI.com with us on Trailblazers courtside in the latest SI.com power rankings. Among the first 12 teams, 10 of them, not surprisingly, from the Western Conference, Indiana and Miami, the only teams from the East that are represented. And the Blazers are sitting at number one. Now, you were just saying, Ian, that what happens in November and December doesn't necessarily mean that much. for the Blazers, though, how important is it to be sitting at 18-4, best road record in the NBA, best record in the Western Conference, second best record in the entire NBA, with some quality wins to this point in time? How important is it for them, a team that is not a perennial playoff power as some of the other groups or some of the other teams in this group of in the top part of your SI.com rankings? How important is it for them, the start that they have had?
Oh, it's huge. You know, if they'd started poorly, could they have turned it around over the second half of the year and been playing this well? I think that would have been difficult for them, as the other teams, the expected contenders, are rounding into shape. So on a couple of fronts, I mean, right now Portland could basically go 500 the rest of the year and still be in a real strong position going into the playoffs. But the other thing is, for a young team to have this kind of confidence over the course of the year, it's just enormous for Damian Lillard and Batum and for their bench to come together so quickly. And then for Aldridge I think he's always felt like he was better than people thought. And now he's got something to defend, kind of. He's got his team off to this early start. And it's on him to make sure that they keep moving forward, that they may remain in contention. That's a great thing for him. He's never been in that position before of not just playing to prove himself, but to prove his team. And the fact that he'll be doing that all season long now, it's a huge thing for him. And when you look at the team, they don't have to do it this year. They don't have to go all the way this year. It's not their one and only chance, like it is for Indiana, I think. You know, this is the one year that they'll have the chance to have Danny Granger and Paul George and maybe Scola on the same team. But for Portland, they'll be able to keep building off this. So it's just huge to start this way. You know, what I was saying, that you can't remember what happens in the early months of the year, that's not true about Portland. I think we'll all remember going into the playoffs that Portland was the surprise team in the early months of the year. And, you know, arguably right up there with Indiana and Miami.
Now, I asked you the question a moment ago, Ian, about Paul George and, you know, second best player in the league. At that power forward position right now, is there a better player in the league than LaMarcus Aldridge?
Nobody is playing better right now, that's for sure. But I bet if we were to ask LaMarcus, should we say that you're the best power forward in the NBA? I would bet he would say no. Out of respect for what Tim Duncan's done, what Dirk Nowitzki's done, you know, and that they're right there doing great work for their teams now. And obviously Tim Duncan's minutes are being spared to get them through for when the games really matter. But I would bet if you were to ask him, he would say, the last couple of years I've had and the strong couple of opening months, they don't put me ahead of Duncan or Nowitzki, because when I saw LaMarcus a few weeks ago when he came through Boston, all he was talking about was getting his team deep into the playoffs now, because that's something he hasn't done. And if that's what's important to you, then I think your perspective is really good, that you have a long ways to go before you can display some of those champions.
Ian, we've already seen some deals in the early part of this NBA season. Everybody points to December 15th as the date that you can start trading guys that were signed as free agents in the offseason. What kind of activity do you think we're going to see as teams have gotten past a quarter of the season, started to figure out what they have, maybe figured out what they still need to have? What teams do you think maybe are going to be active, maybe some names of guys that you think could be on the move?
Well, we'll hear all sorts of crazy rumors about the Knicks that they're going to be able to trade Amari Stoudemire for LeBron James or something. So we'll be reading all about that, and none of it will happen. And then for sure, Houston will be dangling a Sheik and see if they can get something for him. The most interesting one to me is going to be what happens in Boston with Rajon Rondo. I would think by the time he comes back, the Celtics are going to be a 500 team or maybe even above 500. They've got a tremendous schedule this month, only 3 road games this month. And if he's back on the floor by the end of the month,
you know, they'll be in the position, if he's healthy, to enable him to put up big numbers for an overachieving team. And then we'll see if a market builds for him going into the deadline. I would think a team like Houston would love to have him. Obviously, the Knicks would love to have him, but they don't have anything to trade for.
What? You wouldn't give up Amari Stoudemire?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, people are dying to take on Amari Stoudemire. The only team that ever wanted to give him money was the Knicks because they totally whiffed on LeBron and Wade and Bosch in 2010. So, yeah, there definitely will be movement. I would think there's going to be more activity this year than there was last year at the deadline.
Speaking of the Nets, that whole dysfunctional family there, is there any hope for that situation to turn around as they hopefully get to some better health for Deron Williams and Brooke Lopez? But it seems like already the age of Garnett and Pierce starting to show even more so than they did in Boston last year. But is that situation salvageable for Jason Kidd in his first NBA season as a head coach?
I think they have a chance to turn things around and you know, in this terrible conference, make the playoffs. It's almost like the second division of the NBA, the East, you know, after Indiana and Miami. It's like the European Soccer League. and so they have a chance to, you know, get into the playoffs, avoid relegation. They have a chance to do that. But when I think about Garnett and Pierce appearing to just fall off the face of the earth, to me, they went from a very heavily structured team in Boston and a coach who knew what he was doing to a coach that doesn't know what he's doing in Brooklyn. And they just don't have any structure there. I mean, if Jason Kidd can't manage the roles on his own coaching staff and has to fire the most expensive assistant coach in history, how can anyone think that he's assigned the roles properly for his players? If he can't manage his own staff, how can he manage his team? And I think that's the real problem with them. And I would think if they don't turn things around, there's going to be more and more pressure on Nets management, Billy Cain, to replace Jason Kidd.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be
Would Billy Cain be on in the firing line at that point?
Well, I think that's why you would hear – You'll begin to hear about him replacing Jason Kidd.
Better him than me.
But it's him. Somebody's gotta be held accountable. $189 million there. It makes Paul Allen look like a cheapskate. They've been awful. And you can't say it's because they lack talent. It's because the players don't know how they're supposed to play together. And it's inexcusable. It was silly to hire a guy with no experience to coach a team like this, and now we're seeing that coaching really does matter in the NBA.
Ian, thank you so much for the visit, as always. We anticipate that we'll be seeing you in Portland before too long if the Blazers continue this nice start to their season, and we'll look for your great stuff, as always, on SI.com in the interim.
I appreciate it. I grew up in Portland, so I love getting back. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
See you soon. Thank you.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
Ian Thompson, senior writer of SI.com. Again, this week, check it out. Matt Dollinger, one of his associates, putting together the power rankings with the Blazers sitting at number one. Not a bad spot. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, something that might be forthcoming. NBA Deputy Commissioner Adam Silver discussing a move that once he takes over as commissioner, maybe we'll see. And it might be a good idea to maybe have a little bit more parity.
Openness.
In terms of good competition. Get rid of some things that the Eastern Conference, that bad conference, is dealing with right now. We'll talk about it when we come back. It's Trailblazers Courtside presented by Pacific Power, simulcast on Comcast Sportsnet, the Blazers Radio Network, and stream live at trailblazers.com. Stream of cars heading into the Moda Center. WWE SmackDown on the horizon tonight. And gonna check that out, Tone. It's going to be going to be a fun night. And a good way to spend an off night. I think a few Blazer players will be in the building as well. Great crossover of athletes that like WWE action. So
it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to watch.
Now, if you're thinking about a good holiday gift, Trailblazers Holiday Ticket Pack is available. That's two tickets to three great games as low as $100. We're talking about the Clippers. We're talking about the Cavs. We're talking about the O.J. Mayo. Why am I blanking on what team he plays for?
Milwaukee Bucks.
Milwaukee Bucks. Those are the three teams. Pick up that holiday ticket pack by visiting trailblazers.com/holiday. So we mentioned before the break that Deputy Commissioner Adam Silver of the NBA did an interview with Sirius Radio yesterday, and he said that we might have gotten to the point where divisions in the NBA have outlived their usefulness. And he says the next time that the competition committee gets together, he's going to suggest that they take a long look at maybe just dividing the teams up without worrying about divisions. For instance, right now, you have six divisions, three in each conference. The winners of each division are guaranteed no worse than the fourth seed in the playoffs. So the Celtics would be the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs right now as the winner of the Atlantic Division if the season ended today, even though their record is 10-12. That's only the sixth best record in the Eastern Conference. They would be 13th and out of the playoffs if they were in the Western Conference. So I think this is definitely addressing the fact that the East is so weak right now, and that one division, the Atlantic, really is bringing the entire conference down.
Well, what they need to do is make the conference better. I mean, they need better management, better ownership, better something over there. But what I'll say is this. I like the idea of divisions. I don't like the idea of guaranteed anything. You know, you fall where you fall. If you've got the eighth best record in the Western, in the Eastern Conference, then that's where you fall. But you need divisions because of geographic location, mm-hmm. in terms of ease of travel. I like all of that. What they need to do with is anything guaranteed. If you don't, you can be the best team in that Northeast Division, but if you don't have a record worthy of the playoffs, you simply don't get in, because it's utterly ridiculous that the Boston Celtics, if they were 13th in the East, should be in the playoffs.
So now the way they do it is every team in your division you play four times. That's a guarantee. You don't necessarily play every team in your conference four times. Some you only play three times. Would you like to see, if possible, a totally balanced schedule where you're playing everybody in your conference the same number of times, regardless of division?
Well, the only problem with that is you may not play the other conference. Right. You wouldn't be able to play the other conference twice. What I like first and foremost is the idea of home and away, no matter what. Let's start with that premise. So no matter where you play, if it's Boston and the Blazers, you get a 1-1 game.
Yeah.
Then after that, you can start building the rest of the schedule.
Okay. So we'll find out. But Adam Silver maybe already just floating out the idea that things could get a little different in terms of maybe some realignment. I know it might be better geographically to realign some teams, and maybe that will bring about a change in some things. Maybe we wouldn't even have a division. It would seem strange, but at least he's floating that idea out there for the present time. All right, welcome back. I put the wraps on this edition of Trailblazers Courtside. Look ahead at the week ahead for the Blazers and tell you about when we'll be joining you next with this fine program. As we continue, we are streamed live at trailblazers.com and simulcast on the Blazers Radio Network and Comcast Sports Network. Our Trailblazers courtside crew tonight consists of director Phil Beard, producer Nick Elliott, video Greg St. Martin, graphics operator John McConnell, audio Corey Griffin, cameras JC and Zip, engineer Bruce Williams, online coordinator Justin Moulter, and our radio producer, the one and only captain Rich Patterson. As we check out the captain's cam, I was talking to Daniel Bryan at WWE today, and he was remarking about how he grew up watching Portland wrestling, and
wow.
that gave him the motivation to become a WWE superstar. And I thought, gosh, he would love to see, I bet, some of the footage that the captain has chronicled over the years of great Portland wrestling.
I'll tell you, the best thing I see right now on that screen is that lamp.
Oh,
that
yeah.
lamp is some kind of awesome.
It's a conversation piece, without question.
Yes,
and
we've got a mini version behind
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Oh, we're all.
We are not denied.
That's an icon.
The captain is not. He's nothing if not festive. The holidays bring out the best in him.
We don't have any. We got to get some dang old Christmas stuff in this room, though. We don't have any right now.
Yeah, we need to get things going. Next edition of Trailblazers Courtside will be next Monday night. We'll be on the road, 4-game road trip, and so Adam Bjornsson and Michael Holton will be hosting the show. Sam Amico from Fox Sports Ohio will be among the guests because the Blazers will be playing on the back end of the trip, Cleveland and Minnesota. But coming up this week, one more home game, Houston on Thursday night, national television. Ah, here's the captain brightening up our set. And a little, yeah, see?
Well.
All it takes. All
just,
it takes.
What happened?
Start. It's a start. I never look better.
Hey, I kind of like it.
Never look better. So the the opportunity is there for the Blazers to get one more chance. National television, remember, later start for the Blazers and Rockets on Thursday night at the Moda Center. And then the road trip begins at Philly Saturday, at Detroit on Sunday. Some winnable games coming up, and I know they'd love a little payback against the Rockets.
I got to get it. Got to show those guys what you're made of. The Blazers owe this team, and they need to show them something.
All right, that's coming up on Thursday night, so we'll hope you'll be out at the Moda Center for that one as well. All right, thanks to everybody for being a part of the show tonight. Blazer assistant Kim Hughes, as well as Ian Thompson, the senior writer for SI.com. For Antonio Harvey, I'm Brian Wheeler. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Trailblazers Courtside, presented by Pacific Power. We'll be with you along the Blazers radio network for the broadcast on Thursday night, 6:35, with a pregame show and the tip-off just after 7:30 for the Blazers and the Rockets before we head out on the road for 4 straight. Until we join you next from the road, as we talk to you from there, but Trailblazers Courtside again next Monday night. I'm Brian Wheeler for Antonio Harvey. So long, everyone. One.